The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hi, this is Jim.
And this is Max.
Check out our podcast, The Step Over, Liberty Ballers Podcast Network, for all of your Sixers needs.
Player analysis, game breakdowns, who would look coolest in a headband, and more.
Subscribe to Liberty Ballers podcast feed on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and check out The Step Over, a podcast about Sixers basketball.
Mostly.
Michael Kist, Benjamin Solak. It's the Kist and Solak Show, presented by SB Nation and Bleeding Green Nation. You are flying high on the Kist and Solak Show. This is episode 28, brought to you by the fine folks at SB Nation and Bleeding Green Nation. I am your host, Michael Kist. You can follow me on Twitter at MichaelKistNFL, as always, joined by the best doggone co-host in the game, Mr. 8-Year Streak Without a Bad Day. He is Benjamin Solak. Follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. Ben, how you doing, brother?
Man, every day is a good day to be alive.
That's good,
Mike,
to hear.
And you want to know?
I do want to know why.
Well, okay. So I had a really cool moment where just somebody who listens to the show regularly, his name is Jordan, just hit me up on Twitter and was like, "Hey, man, every time I'm not having a good day, I think to myself that every day is a good day to be alive, and then my day is better." And I was like, "Isn't that crazy how that works?" And he was like, "Yep." And so that made me feel warm and fuzzy inside. So shout out to you, Jordan, and shout out to everybody having good days for the rest of time. Amen.
Beautiful. I love that you bring that positivity to the listeners. Somehow it doesn't come to me, but it's whatever. Ben, big roster move to be excited about. This is why it's a good day. Destiny Vayo is out. Cornerback Dexter McDougal is in. Ben, tell all of us why this is a move as big as bringing in Le'Veon Bell. We almost did an emergency pod for it. That's a lie.
Trayvon Hester will get more snaps now. So, Philadelphia for the past 2 weeks has been going into active game days with 6 wide receivers active, and then pretty much 2 of them get major special teams reps. One of them is Kamar Aiken. I think he also does special team stuff. And then the other 3, being Aggie, Alshon, and J-Matt, pretty much comprise the majority of the offensive snaps. So that feels a little bit like poor roster allocation. The other one you could bring up would be 10 offensive linemen and Chance Warmack remaining on the 53-man roster, and anybody who knows BLG, may he forever reign, knows that BLJ does not want Warmack to remain on the roster at his current cap value, and it makes a lot of sense. I feel better about the 10 offensive linemen simply because, to me, you stockpile offensive linemen in today's day and age. You know, I'm no fan of Warmack, but when you think you have an offensive lineman who can give you significant reps, you got to hold on to him because they're so few and far between quality players in the NFL. But the 6 offensive line, the 6 receivers, excuse me, up against 3 active defensive tackles is a bit of a question. There is, of course, things to be said for Brandon Graham and Michael Bennett playing on the interior. However, this will be the 3rd week in a row that the Eagles go with 3, and it'll probably be Fletcher Cox. We're assuming Haloti Ngata is going to be back, and then Trayvon Hester will round out and will be number 3. obviously, if Nada goes down again, an older player who's been dealing with a calf injury, then you've got two active, and that's a tricky spot to be in. So that's to me the big implication of Vio being released, is that there's more playing time for Trayvon Hester, but the Eagles still remain relatively thin at a defensive tackle.
Yeah, and we talked about Hester on the All-22 review, and we liked what he brought. Brought some pressures. He brought some run stops in his 15 snaps, so that's a good thing. Ben, I just saw your tweet about how we were supposed to record at 7:20. You open up Skype to, what, three? Is that three missed calls from me?
I will tell the story.
Slander.
I hit up Mike at 6:20 p.m. Central Standard Time. And I said, Michael.
Fake time anyway.
What time do we intend? Well, I have to, okay, 6:20 Central Time. And I said, Mike, what time do you want to record this pod, my guy? He was like, 6:45, 7. And I said, actually, can we do 8:20? And I did not say that I was like out and about doing things, but I thought the implication, I said like I need to do a little later, was that like that's when I anticipate coming back home. At 7:17, I get a Slack message from Mike. Let's go! It's 3 minutes early. If we like we're not even at like we're not even past the stage where you politely allow somebody to be slightly late. And again, as I've been trying to convince Mike for a while now, we are two dudes recording a podcast. No one else is affected really by the scheduling of this, right? It's just us choosing to do a thing at a time that we picked an hour ago. And so I eventually get back to my apartment. I open up Skype at 7:23, and I have three missed calls, one at 7:18, one at 7:21, and one at 7:22, when I have already told Mike that after he slacked me, like, yeah, I'm walking back right now. Mike still called me on Skype again two times just to make sure he knew, I knew, how important it was that he got the ball rolling. I like how we didn't open with this. We did a little bit of analysis, and now we're back.
You asked, why is your clock 3 minutes fast? And I said, well, you're 2 minutes slow, and I wanted to make that point by calling you at 8:22 and not having you answer. So that was the reason for that. I figured
Listen,
you would call me.
Mike, you a big basketball fan? You a huge Sixers fan?
I'm a big fan of being on time. I don't think basketball's a real sport.
That's what I thought. You're not a huge Sixers fan. So are you the one who's really worried about watching the Sixers open against the Celtics? No, that would be me. And I still had to push it late because I was out getting groceries. So
it sounds like it's your fault for number one.
Let's
like
just
in a
record
fake sport
a podcast. So I can watch Markelle Fultz. Thank you.
And so the Eagles have brought in linebacker DJ Bello to the practice squad.
I loved that transition. That was flawless.
They also hosted corner / safety Quinton Rollins, formerly with the Packers, and safety Ibrahim Campbell. So along with the injuries, it doesn't look like they feel comfortable with Trey Sullivan and DeAndre Hall as depth pieces right now. Ben, do you have anything else on those guys or any thoughts on why they might be maybe bringing one of those guys in along with the signing of Dexter McDougal?
The DeAndre Hall thing is embarrassing at this point. It's officially embarrassing. They traded for him at the deadline to put him on the 53-man roster, and he has done nothing, despite the fact that everything that possibly could have happened to give him space to perform, he still hasn't made it. Ibrahim Campbell, to me, lacks a lot of athleticism when he came out of Northwestern. I just don't necessarily think he's a strong player. And then Quinton
I was a Quinton Rollins fan when I thought he had ball skills in college, man, but it just hasn't translated for him.
He's bounced around, right? He's had multiple trials at multiple places from what I can remember. You know, if he's brought in, then at least he has a little bit of experience playing in the league, and he's been in a couple different systems, and he's had to start before, and so he's got that going for him.
Yeah, he's got 15 starts, 33 games played,
And Ibrahim Campbell was an East Pennsylvania guy. I'm pretty sure he was a Philly guy, so he's got the home blood running for him. That's the best I've got there. I don't know. I mean, I would love to see them bring in Campbell. I would love to have another safety who actually plays safety on the roster, potentially taking snaps. Apparently, from what the positional coaches were saying during media availability this week, everybody's just gung-ho about this whole Avante Maddox to safety thing, which, okay.
Sure.
I mean, like, obviously, they're the ones practicing, you know, with him, running through the drills. They're with him day in and day out, so I'm not going to say they know that I know any more of what they're talking about. I haven't really seen Maddox get tested the way I would like to see him get tested in a game situation to feel good about him playing safety, but this is where we are, so it's where we are.
Would you say that one of his biggest flaws is at the line with play strength and with some technique coming out?
Who are we talking, Maddox?
Yeah.
Maddox's biggest issue coming out to me was body control and aggressiveness. I think he's very quick, but he bites into his own quickness, into his own agility, because he plays far too far into the first flash of color that he sees, and then he's forced into a recovery position. Whereas if you're patient, he has the quickness to just stick with guys. However, that's very slot coverage oriented. I never watched his film through the lens of expecting him to play safety. You know what I mean?
Right. So yeah,
I
can't. Me too.
I think the biggest issue for a guy playing safety who hasn't played it before is simply you have to be paying attention peripherally to so much more than when you're playing man coverage as a slot corner, or mm-hmm. even when you're playing a curl hook zone as a cover three. You know, just underneath defender. You have so much more going on in your field of vision that you have to process. And that's the thing, is I haven't seen a team attack Maddox with a lot of forcing him to make decisions deep. I mean, in order to do so, you have to be able to protect and not have the pass rush come so you can get to that deep area, which is very tough. And that's something that Jim Schwartz knows, because when Sidney went down, instead of sticking a guy who hadn't played slot before into the slot and, you know, taking Rasul, putting him outside, and just like putting Ronald Darby or Jalen Mills in the slot and leaving Maddox there, he put Sewell as the deep safety to move Maddox up to the slot, because the slot corner position is more important relative to how teams attack the Eagles defense than the free safety position. Because mm-hmm. it's very hard to get the ball down to the deep middle against the Eagles defense. Usually you've been sacked by then. So, you know, it's a protected position. I just don't view Maddox as a safety. It's still not something I have around my head. And so Campbell makes sense to me in that regard. But at the same time, if the coaching staff is sold on the Maddox idea, then they're going to keep sticking with him, and they're going to feel like they have enough safeties to go on.
Love it, Ben. Thank you for elaborating on that. Hey, let's get to the topic of the show. We got a little derailed though in the beginning by your lateness, which threw everything off for me. I mean, that's just, you know, when I'm expecting someone to be there at 8:20. So let's get nerdy for a second. Let's talk some stats. Ben's just rubbing his head right now. So we've got the 3-3 Philadelphia Eagles squaring off with the 3-2 Carolina Panthers. Today, our preview, one of two, is going to be covering the Philadelphia Eagles offense against the Carolina Panthers defense. Tomorrow, we'll flip it around. We'll talk about the Panthers offense against the Eagles defense. So let's start with some stats. Eagles come into the game converting third downs at 41%, ranks 15th and climbing. Carolina does well in this area, ranking 9th. The Eagles have also climbed to 15th in red zone efficiency, converting 56% now. And this is where Carolina really struggles, which is great for us, Ben. They rank 31st in opposing red zone efficiency. They have allowed 82% of their defensive red zone stands to falter and convert for touchdowns. That's real bad. You got to figure they've done a decent job from keeping teams away from those red zone situations, though, because they're only allowing 22.8 points per game, which is 10th in the league. So, Ben, one of the things that I also looked at today, I'm looking at explosive margins. So you're looking at plays that are 20 yards and over, how much you get on offense minus how much you give up on defense. It's about as predictive as turnovers, so it's pretty important there. Right now, the Rams are the best in the league at +9. Go figure. The worst two teams in the league, the Carolina Panthers and the Philadelphia Eagles. Ben, where have our big plays gone on offense? What can we do?
It really is, I don't want to say surprising, that there's been a lack of explosive plays, because when you consider the adjustments that have been made in the past 2 weeks to kind of counter the fact that Carson's been getting hit a lot and the ball's coming out quicker, mm-hmm. You can understand why those explosive plays are kind of being lost in the shuffle. Now, I will say, we're talking about a gained versus allowed situation here, right?
Right.
So because the Eagles' defense is allowing so many explosive plays, it's kind
well,
of...
Well, here's the thing. Since Wentz has come back, they're still 25th in explosive plays created for that time frame.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, well then, scratch
throw that out
quick
the window.
Counterpoint. It's okay. No, I've still got my overarching idea, but I just thought that was something. Okay, fine. Then I would say that simply what you're going to have with a lot, when you look at the way that Philadelphia's passing attack is constructed, they feed the tight end. They love to feed Zach Ertz across the intermediate area of the field. They're willing to go deep, and they run a healthy amount of deep routes with Nelson Agholor specifically. Obviously, we've seen Shelton Gibson get involved in a shot play this season, but really they want to use deep routes to open up the intermediate areas of the field. And in doing so, you stay ahead of the sticks. It's what allows Philadelphia to convert so readily on those like 3rd and 9s and 3rd and 11s is because of how effectively that they're able to use the middle of the field. That all comes from being able to stretch it deep just with routes and have those threats. And so it's not that Philadelphia can't go deep. It's that they view a more sustainable model of play as using deep routes to open up the intermediate areas of the field. It's shorter throws. It's higher percentage ideas. You don't need to be incredible athletes to win down there. Like, you know, Zach Ertz is just basically out there sitting in holes between zones. And Carson's able to lace it in there. He's got a rocket arm, and he's quite precise across the middle of the field. So to me, it's not a necessarily deficiency so much as it is an offensive ideology, a way that they like to attack.
Yeah, and we talked about it with the two opponents, because context is king. With the Indianapolis Colts, they play that soft shell zone, and the Redskins came in with the wrong plan against them with a vertical game plan, and they weren't able to do anything because they had the wrong game plan. So that's something that the Eagles had to do against the Colts, and kind of the same thing against the Titans as well. So context is big there. They also blew out the Giants, so they weren't really needing explosive plays in the second half. So that can kind of muddy things too. So not the end of the world, just something to point out, something that I want to track. Now, looking at this Carolina defense, what we can do against them schematically, you look at that front four, and on the interior, they're stacking Kawan Short, 315 pounds, with Dontari Pose, 346 pounds in the middle. You throw in some Vernon Butler at 330. Kyle Love's at 310. That's a lot of beef. So, Ben, one of the things that you can do to neutralize that size advantage that the Eagles, or size disadvantage, really, for the Eagles, is run trap plays. And I have an article up about this on bleedinggreennation.com, but we'll get into it anyway, because you're going to be beating them on those trap plays with angles and leverage, not trying to go strength versus strength. And it's something that we did to them last year, and it's something that the Redskins did to them successfully on Sunday. On one of the first ones that I saw, they added in a jet motion too, which was nice little wrinkle to get those linebackers flowing the wrong way. They trap the three tech, so the defensive tackle lined up outside of the guard, that three tech there, they trap him. Luke Kuechly bites on the jet, and he takes himself out of the formation. The center doesn't even need to go get him. So the second one that they ran, same type concept with a different window dressing, 6 yards late in the game, second and fourth, they're up three from the Panthers 24, key drive, boom, 10 yards. When they got to have it, they pulled out the trap and they got a key conversion. In total for the Redskins, 5 traps, 31 yards, highly effective for them. The other way you're going to beat a stout front four like that, and the Redskins did this too, and the Eagles do it well, pin pull concepts, get guys to the edge and wide zone, make those big boys get down the line. And again, just beat them with angles, leverage, and athleticism. The Eagles did it to them last year in week 6 when they went over the Panthers with 4 trap concepts for 37 yards. Expect to see it again. And on top of that, the Redskins had success with those pin pull sweeps, just like I talked about. Also some wide zone with some backside RPO replace lines. So everything for me is lining up real well in the ground and short game, in my opinion, Ben.
Eric Washington is a new defensive coordinator. And Carolina, Steve Wilks, the old defensive coordinator, head coach in Arizona, the defensive coordinator before him, Sean McDermott, head coach, Buffalo Bills. Sean McDermott, obviously, from Philadelphia, represent. Though he's like super bald and crazy now, so I don't know, maybe not.
I can relate.
Eric Washington does not come from that tree. He comes from a similar tree, but he was the Chicago Bears defensive line coach for the past 7 seasons before coming here to coordinate the defense. Most recently, under Vic Fangio for the last couple of years. And obviously, Vic, fantastic defensive coordinator. One thing that Washington is doing that Vic would do more so when he was in San Francisco, I don't think he does it as much, though I may be wrong with that, is that Eric Washington loves to play those linebackers, Luke Kuechly and Thomas Davis, way up into the line.
Yeah.
Right? And for a predominantly cover three defense, when you play those linebackers so far up into the line, you're giving a lot of space into the center of the field, that intermediate Zach Ertz area that we were just talking about, right? Now, in your ideal situation, you have a safety who's coming right down into that spot. He's kind of filling that cover three area. You're running cover three robber. That'd be ideal. But when teams go A, heavy, 12 personnel, 13 personnel, Mike, I don't know if you've heard the Eagles run that a lot.
Most in the league at 44%, yeah.
When you bring those formations in and you necessitate that they bring that extra safety down into the box and they line them up a lot tighter into the line, you leave that void very, very heavy. So what does this translate to? Well, number one, those close-up linebackers, yeah, you can definitely pin and pull those guys. You can definitely trap those guys. Your targets are much closer to the line of scrimmage. So if you give them eye candy and they step forward, mm-hmm. Well, a linebacker who's 4 yards off the ball is still 3 yards off the ball. He can adjust. He can go get outside. He can change his angle. A linebacker who's like 3 yards off the ball is now 2 yards off the ball. He's got less room to operate, right? Game mm-hmm. of inches. But when these linebackers are forward like that, you're able to strike them well. And that's definitely what you saw from Washington, is Washington was able to bring those linebackers very tight into the line of scrimmage. And then when they executed pin pull, or traps ideas, they're able to seal off those linebackers easily. They've got good angles for their offensive linemen. Conversely, we do have to talk about the opposite, which is that when you're trying to run inside zone, up the gut on those guys, it can be very difficult because yeah. Luke Kuechly, Thomas Davis, and Shaq Thompson are coming to smash your head, and all three of them are playing at quite high levels. Thomas Davis, obviously older, but coming off of the suspension, so he's a little fresher. I think Shaq Thomas is panning out nicely. They use him as a little overhang guy. And obviously, Keekly's a monster and is still playing at an incredibly high level. So these guys will get very aggressive coming downhill into zone flow. But when you can incorporate, you talked about jet ideas, things to slow their attack, then you can pull off inside. But also, you can just take advantage of how hard they play down into the line. The second idea then, immediately, which all Eagles fans should hear when we have aggressive linebackers close to the line of scrimmage, you should go RPO game.
Yep.
Your RPOs put linebackers in places of conflict. And already by alignment, by being so far into the line of scrimmage, Mike, they're already put into a dangerous spot because they're too close to the run and they're too far away from those zone drops where those quick three-step slants are going to hit. Those quick five-yard ins are going to hit, so on and so forth. And so I expect a heavy RPO game, the quick game, as not necessarily something to come out with on the opening script, but something to lean on if you get into a bind, if the Carolina defense is holding you down for the first couple reps. I think that quick game is something that can really open up the offense for Philadelphia. Again, attacking that middle area of the field that the linebackers are vacating because they're stepping so far forward.
That's a good point, too, because when you look at what this offense does and did against the Giants, you know, there was that sputter in the beginning after the first drive where they got the turnover and everything like that. And then what they did was after that sputter, they brought things in. So if they need a drive starter, then those RPOs and things of that nature, like you just talked right. about, definitely are what you want to go to get your offense back in a rhythm. And talking about these linebackers, because they're awesome. One thing that you notice about Luke Kuechly is just his processing speed and his pre-snap diagnosing is just next level. And you watch him on things like play action. He's taking that initial read step like you do in zone. And then before they're even completing the fake, you know, he's getting into his zone, undercutting deep routes, deep over routes, things of that. But I mean, the first play against the Redskins that you see is this. No, it wasn't the first play. It was actually one of the trap concepts. It was one of the first trap concepts that they ran. And you see Luke Kuechly pointing out to the guard, there's something going on here. And he sniffs it out, and they were able to stop him for like a 3-yard gain on that one. That was like one of their successes against a trap play. He did it on the next one when they ran that jet motion. He's pointing at the guard. He's seeing something. He saw something on film. He's seeing it live. He's pointing it out. And like it's hard to fool him in that regard.
Back in his Boston College tape, which kind of one thing that a lot of NFL draft evaluators will like to do is you just go back and you watch a tape of elite players who, you know, when back they were in college, you know, obviously Kuechly was a first round pick, but yeah. he ended up being, you know, a defensive player of the year, defensive rookie of the year. And so you go back and you see, and what stands out with Kuechly's Boston College tape is simply there's instincts there that you can't teach.
Yeah.
And then it translates into Carolina. So, you know, Kuechly's watching enough film, but he's also played enough time at the NFL level to just know when that guard is a half step back from yeah. where he should be in alignment, which is obviously something you can check and you can see and you can key it, which I'm sure he is, but it's right when he gets into his stance and he looks at the line, he goes, man, that guy just feels a little further away than usual, right? And this is just, you don't teach that recognition ability. Kuechly's an animal. The other just monstrosity on this Carolina defense that we have to talk about and is the player I'm the most worried about is Kawan Short.
Oh, for sure.
Kawan Short is so good. Oh my gosh. He's built like a refrigerator, okay? Yeah. He is as wide as he is tall. He's literally an equilateral polygon. It's unbelievable how thick he is. And then his ability to be explosive with the first step, quick off the snap, and so he generates a good angle on you, gets his hands fit nicely, and then once he has leverage on you, you don't have the power to anchor against him. Jason Kelce doesn't. Isaac Samuelo definitely does not. Brandon Brooks will probably win a few and lose a few. Right.
And Jason Kelce's down 20 pounds on him. That's a big reason why I want to trap, because blocking Kawan Short straight up like that, strength for strength, that's a tough proposition, man. You got to do some things.
It's silly to watch how effective he is. And Carolina, when they look to bring pressure, it's typically a zone blitz situation where they're not bringing more than five. Occasionally, rarely, they'll bring six.
Late in the game, when they needed one, they brought seven with Mike Adams, but that was very rare from what I saw from them on tape. You're right, yeah.
What game was that?
I was against Washington. I believe it was third and okay. eight, if I'm not mistaken. They got that deflection with Mike Adams. I have it here somewhere, but third and
let's
six.
Let's talk about third and longs. Let's talk about third and longs, because I think this is going to be a really interesting spot for Philadelphia, and you never want to gamble and be like, the Eagles are going to convert every third down in this game, but I think this is going to be a game where the Eagles convert a lot of third downs. I'm going to tell you why. Carolina, across pretty much every third and like six plus that I saw, does one of two things. One, they want to be a middle of the field open team, which is irregular because they're a cover three team, and cover three is middle of the field closed. Middle of the field open is basically saying there's no single high center fielding safety. It's not cover three or cover one. You're looking at cover two or quarters. And it's often because they want to pattern match when they are in third and decently long situations. And to pattern match, you kind of need to have split safety so you have the numbers to accomplish the pattern match. So you're very often going to see split safety looks rushing four on third and long. They're either going to do that or they're going to basically run a fire zone. They're going to blitz five and they're going to drop three deep and three underneath. And it's pretty clear which one it's going to be usually at the snap, because if it's going to be a fire zone, they're going to have six guys peppering the line of scrimmage. So the safeties in the corners have to be where they belong, because they're kind of, you're putting confusion up in the front. And if it's the split safety pattern match look, you need to have your guys in place over the receivers so that they all know their reads and who's getting the second and who's getting the third and so on and so forth. So it's pretty clear to see. And as an offense, you can kind of choose a little bit. You can affect which one to get them in. If you go really tight splits and you bring all your receivers and your linebacker and your tight ends in, it's very difficult to pattern match out of that alignment, but it's really easy to run a fire zone because you have so many guys at the line of scrimmage anyway. And if you spread everybody out, well, it's very that's where you'd like to pattern match in the situation. You have three receivers to this side, two to the other side, and you can choose. But then it'll be very clear where your blitzers are potentially coming from, and it's harder to fake pressure to this side and then bring pressure from that side. So you can kind of affect which one it is. Philadelphia loves to run four-man route concepts, and even five-man route concepts, where the pre-snap read, and DeFilippo, when he was the offensive coordinator here, loved to talk about this. The pre-snap read was a middle-of-the-field open or middle-of-the-field-closed read. And what that means is that half of the route concept, half of the play, let's call it the front side, the three receiver side, is built to be middle of the field closed, right? Let's call it levels. They're trying to beat cover three, so they're running levels to the play side, three guys flooding the zone. Gorgeous. The backside is not built to be a middle of the field closed defense. It's built to be a middle of the field open defense.
Right.
They're running smash against cover two. Right? Yeah. And so you got levels to the front side, smash to the back side. And so the quarterback comes up at the snap, and all he has to do is read safety. And if he sees middle of the field closed, he knows he's going front side. If he sees middle of the field open, he knows he's going back side. Right? Because that's the pre-snap read. That idea is a very strong idea. It's very effective for young quarterbacks. It's something you see in Sean McVay's office, something you see heavily in Doug Peterson. DeFilippo uses it now when he's in Minnesota. That's something that I think you can really get with Carolina, because their third down coverages, they'll move their safeties around a lot pre-snap. They're a team that loves to bring linebackers forward and pull them back, and bring a nickel corner in and pull them back. They love to like screw with you that way. But at the snap, that safety's got to choose where he's going to go. Once he chooses, you know where your reads are. You need a little bit of time to pull this off. But that's an idea that I think Philadelphia could really cash in on, because from what I can see, Carolina has two very clear coverages they work on third down.
Ben, guessing game time. So zone coverage, how much would you guess? It's somewhere in between 60 and 80%. Let's see how close you can get. Somewhere in between 60 and 80%. How much last year do you think the Panthers ran zone? Because I don't think it's changed much this year.
73.
And where do you think they rank? No.
Oh, I thought you were, I'm not saying, I thought you're right. You're saying I'm that not was saying right. You're right. I was like, what's up? Where I think I rank? They rank in the league?
Yeah.
7th.
Final answer.
11th.
You strayed. 72.5% of the time they were in zone last year. That's first in the league, Ben.
That's first?
Yeah. According that's to first? PFF. Yeah, that's first.
In a league in which the Los Angeles Chargers and the Kansas City Chiefs exist? Okay.
They were right there. But yeah, so I'm going to give you the 73% because I'm going to round up. I always round up with these things for articles and whatnot. So I'm going to give you a win for that first part. You doubted yourself in the second one.
I called 73 at 72.5. I just underestimated how much other teams think they can play man coverage.
So speaking of their coverage, one guy that I want to talk about, their rookie, Dante Jackson. He can click clack, man. He's a twitched up fellow. And he's a guy that we talked about a lot during the draft process because the Eagles were looking at his size speed profile. We ended up going with Avanti Maddox, who is now playing safety. But Jackson having a pretty decent season for a rookie and they're asking him to play outside, which is interesting because he's undersized, to put it mildly. He's got teeny tiny arms. Still, he's making it work. And according to PFF, only allowing a 54 quarterback rating when targeted. Opposite of him is James Bradbury. He's more of your conventional build for an outside corner. We're going to see a lot of him and Alshon Jeffrey. I give Alshon the nod in that. Anything else in the secondary? Because one area that I really want to talk about for the Eagles, and you know, we used a ton of 12 and 13. We already talked about it. But this Panthers defense did have some communication issues early. It cost them on a 22-yard touchdown on the Sluggo seam from Vernon Davis. And before the play, you saw Keekly like frantically trying to communicate with his linebackers and safeties, and they just straight up busted. Now, whether that's something that gets cleaned up quickly because they just brought in Eric Reed, the safety, to replace Kurt Coleman, so there's that aspect to it. Who knows? But they better, because you see a touchdown like that to a tight end near the red zone, and I'm licking my chops at that. There are plus matchups for our tight ends if we can get them on those safeties, in my opinion. Is there anything else intriguing to you, or do you want to elaborate on that, wherever you want to go with that, bud?
Yeah, so tight stacks and bunch alignments and these sort of nasty ideas. Whenever I say nasty, it's important to remember nasty is the call for when your widest receiver is inside the slot. I'm not being like, this is nasty. That's the terminology. I always feel like it just sounds weird. Carolina has bump calls and banjo calls and coverage calls for all of those, and you'll see them constantly make them, and the linebacker will be checking with the safety, and the linebacker will be checking with the corner, and the safety will be checking with the corner, and they have to make that audible visibly, right? And so it's something that you can see as route runners. Knowing what those calls typically are, knowing what the audibles will be in certain situations, allows you to build route concepts off of them. Eagles have been using bunches. They've been using those tight stacks, 1-2 receivers. Typically what you'll see as if there's a tight end in that stack, then the linebacker slash safety takes the tight end and the corner just takes the wide receiver in straight man. And mm-hmm. So because the Eagles have such great move tight ends in Ertz and in Goddard, you can really win with leverage there. You know, if you give your tight ends option routes out of stacks, which is a very, very West Coast idea, but if it's something that you want to go for, then you're at a point where they can win with initial leverage simply by alignment. And then I think Shaq Thomas is a good coverage linebacker who can cause some problems there.
Thompson,
Luke Kuechly and Thomas Davis are in their own right. Shaq mm-hmm. Thompson, thank you. Luke Kuechly and Thomas Davis are good backers in their own right, but they don't really, I don't think, hold a candle to what Ertz and Goddard can do in the open field. So if I'm looking to open my tight ends, I'm doing it out of those stacks, because Carolina will work out of their, you know, like I said, tricky to pattern match against those alignments. And so as a result, you'll see them work those two-man games, those I take first in, you take first out, I take first, first off the line, you take second off the line, whatever. And when you know those calls, you can design route concepts accordingly.
I like it. Ben, one last thing that I wanted to touch on before I kick it over to you, something that I saw the Redskins do, and I'm starting to see this from other teams as well. We talk a lot about double mug blitzes on this show. So again, that's, you know, your line is wide, you got the 2-3 techs, and you got the two middle linebackers threatening the A-gap, okay? So what these teams are doing, and the Redskins did this with the running backs and pass pro, since if both those linebackers in the A-gap come, the center has one, the running back has the other. So to help the running back, they line him up between the center and the guard about a yard back.
Ah, a little sniffer.
Yeah, exactly.
Little H-back silliness.
So that puts the onus on the rest of the line to pick up those flanking blitzes if they come. You're also getting that running back at a depth that's better to take on those blitzes, because there's less speed built up by the linebacker and the running back isn't moving to a spot, so he can comfortably anchor from where he is, and it's also easier for him and quicker for him to release into his checkdown if they don't come, because there's typically less trash at that shallow depth. So that's a lot of different things there that are advantageous for the running back. So if you see that and you see him double mugging, you see where the running back is lined up in a weird position between that guard and center about a yard behind them, that's what they're trying to accomplish with that. Ben, as we move into this game, I think we covered that part of it pretty well. Right now, the over-under is 45.5, and the Philadelphia Eagles are favored by 5. Do the math. What is that? What does that put the Eagles at offensively?
So it's like 25-20 or 24.5-19.5.
We'll put it at 25. We'll put it at 25. Over under 25 points for this Philadelphia Eagles offense.
Games in Philly? Yeah. They'll clear 25. I have faith. I believe. I think that this offense is vibing after the way they put the hurt on the Giants. They'd really like to make it two in a row. You know, you got that little bit of an extra added edge. I think this will be one of the first weeks where they don't have to deal with the loss of a offensive player to injury or a position switch before, like the week before. You know what I mean? They're not coming out with a new guy. Honestly, I'm pretty sure, right?
And that continuity is big time. Big time
important.
Yeah,
it's the first continuity we've gotten all season. So I think that that helps a lot. I will say they clear 25 off the top of my head.
I am smashing the over. If they're listening to this show, we just gave them some great ideas on how they can be successful on offense. So if they don't, I'm going to be supremely disappointed with the Philadelphia Eagles. I'm going over on the 25. I think they clear it comfortably. I'm comfortable with what we can do in the run game, in the passing game as well. So tomorrow we are going to be covering, and Ben, that's your job. Ben, any last points, or you want to say goodbye to the gentle listeners and let them know what we have on tap for them next?
No, I mean, you can just go ahead and do whatever you want and say goodbye to whoever you want. You're kind of just running the show here. thank you for listening to the Kissed and Solak show here on BGN Radio. I'm sorry if this episode gets to you 3 minutes later than you're expecting it to. And if that really disrupts your day, then you can hit me up on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K.
I'm going to put this out 3 minutes past the hour, and it's going to inconvenience one person. Yes, I want you to at Benjamin
obnoxious.
Solak.
Okay. If no more episodes of the Kiss and Solak show happen, just know it's because Mike and I are bickering about punctuality. But as I said, I'm Benjamin Solak on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. He's Michael Kist on Twitter at Michael Kist NFL. That's K-I-S-T. Oh, it's been a fun week for the Kissed and Solak show so far. The Reddit AMA that we had, Mike, was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We were on Reddit Eagles just answering some questions. It was a blast. It's a good community there. So we thank you so much for listening. We thank you for following the official BGN Radio account, which has now cleared 2,000 followers, which is a wonderful time. That's very exciting. Of course, there still is the contest going on. Mike, what do they have to do to enter the contest, and what do they win when they do it?
That's a fantastic question, Ben.
I'm opening up Slack that we both don't know. Okay. One grand prize winner gets Doug Peterson's book Fearless, a signed football and a signed visor by old Dougie P. Five runner-ups get a copy of Fearless. You have to retweet the Bleeding Green Nation tweet that has all this information, which you can find at Bleeding Green on the Twitter account. And you have to follow the BGN Radio account along with a couple other accounts. But that contest is a lot of fun. I think, honestly, like, the signed visor gets me pretty excited. Do you know the Eagles are, like, basically undefeated at home when Doug Peterson wears a visor? This is an actual stat.
Oh, man. Does that mean, okay, are the reading glasses going to screw that up? Because they're wanting to know what the reading glasses. Is that, like, doubly?
It's true.
Are we going to blow them out?
Let's make an account. No. Yeah. Let's make a show. No, let's write a book. Doug Peterson, let's do it. Let's make a website that's got like stat things you can click of like Doug Peterson accessories. Like you build your own Doug Peterson, like windbreaker, what color, visor, what color, you know, like green glasses, yes or no. And then the website tells you how successful of a coach that he is. Right. Okay. This is good. We have a lot of time on our hands. So this is something we can do. Where am I even in the outtake right now?
You should probably ask for reviews, I guess. That would be
okay.
And then tell them what we're going to be doing next on the next show.
Okay, that's where I am. So follow at BGN _radio, and make sure you do that stuff. You retweet that tweet and you follow those accounts, and that'll put you in the contest to win those signed items and Fearless, which is a wonderful book. iTunes rating, review, and subscriptions. We're looking for 500 ratings, which is very exciting. We are looking for 200 reviews, which is also very exciting. Of course, only 5-star ratings are accepted. All other ones get thrown in the trash where they belong. Next episode is tomorrow for the Kissed and Solak show, and that is the Eagles defense up against this Carolina offense. You've got it's a Shula offense, isn't it, Mike? Very exciting.
Yeah.
And they've got young, quick guys. They got Christian McCaffrey, and they got Curtis Samuel, and they got DJ Moore, and all these, and CJ Anderson. These young, good weapons in space they can use. And obviously, Cam Newton kind of powers that whole nonsense. So we'll be talking about that. We'll give you our final predictions, lead you into the BGN Radio official pregame episode, and that'll bring us right into the weekend. So thank you so much, as always, for listening to BGN Radio. We will catch you tomorrow.
We are, in fact, all we got. We all we need. Fly Eagles, fly. You are flying high on the Kissed and Solak show. This is episode 28, brought to you by the fine folks at SB Nation, and Bleeding Green Nation. I am your host, Michael Kist. You can follow me at Michael Kist NFL, as always.
Why are you laughing? I did nothing, because this is 100% going to be saved as an outtake. And I would like to make it clear, we just started recording. I've done zero things. I am totally
innocent. I stumbled over like three things, including my own name there. It was slight. You could barely tell, but it was there.
Listen, you haven't been able to figure out that we're presented by SB Nation since SB Nation started presenting us like over a month ago.
Okay, here we go.
My guy, breathe it out. You'll be okay.
All right, I'm good. All right, all the sillies are out. You are flying high on the Kist and Solak show. This is episode 28.
Hey, everybody, how you doing? Well, that's good. My name is Bill Matz. I am the director of Fun and Games for Broad Street Hockey Radio Podcasts.
And I am Kelly, the deputy managing editor of BroadStreetHockey.com.
I'm Steph Driver, the NHL editorial manager for SB Nation.
And I am Charlie O'Connor, lead Flyers writer for TheAthletic.com.
And together we make up BSH Radio, one of the shows that you get at the SB Nation podcast family. We have a lot coming to you this year, and we want you to listen to our show. It is just an all Flyers, all the time show, so much content. I really hope you listen to it. It is a great piece of the SB Nation podcast family, along with all your other favorite sports.
We all love hockey, specifically the Flyers.
Let's go the Flyers.
The hockey team, the Flyers.